Everybody, welcome to Monday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. Kevin Horry alongside, as always, take you to three. Hand it off to our great friend Phil Bonatti, who's back from Radio Row and all the goings on in the Bay Area for the Super Bowl. And he'll be with you for the full 3 hours. So give him a call today. Your thoughts about the Super Bowl, everything else. Again, I'll remind you about that Lee's Air hotline where you can reach Phil directly, 559-320-1430. For us, it's a busy day with Paul. We want to talk about the Bulldogs' effort in Reno, the fact that Fresno State faces a real large task tomorrow in Logan. Also want to get to the rumblings that maybe Derek Carr is coming back next year to the NFL. Get some of your thoughts from Clovis Dave and others about the Super Bowl, and certainly I want to address Robert's question about the outlook for Fresno State baseball, because, you know, we talked that the softball team opened up this last weekend. The baseball team will do the same coming up Friday. So we'll get to that with Paul in just a moment in a very busy hour. Also want to mention that Phil will be in Tulare for World Ag Expo. Goings on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And on Thursday, we will not be on because Phil will start at 2 o'clock because they close things up at 4. So 2 hours each day with Phil. Stop by and see him in Tulare. And again, that Lee's Air hotline is there for you. All right, as far as the other things we need to cover, as always, our lead dogs want to spend a moment or two with you. Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering, a little bit later on, will afford me the time to tell you about the upcoming schedules on both 1430 and 790. Remind you every day about Ed's great business, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape, architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net on the web. When we go over the schedules, I'll again mention Ed's great work for Fresno State, his alma mater, through the Lyles College of Engineering in regard to fundraising. Always the goal to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students, and so many of those grads go to work for Ed at Precision Civil Engineering. Get to that a little bit later. The other thing I want to mention up front comes from the aforementioned Lee's Air Hotline I brought up. In this case, I want to talk about the business itself. Lee's been in the Central Valley since 1981 with the AC, with the heating, with the roofing, with the plumbing, everything there for you. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. You can reach them on the web at leesair.com or give them a call at 825-5337, 825-LEES. Terrific local people. Again, air conditioning, plumbing, heating, roofing, all there for you. And every day they allow me the time to tell you about the weather and the 7 day, a little bit different than it's been the last week or two, in that we're going to be a little bit cooler, and maybe to our benefit, we're going to see a little bit of precip and maybe some snow up in the mountains. 58 today, a low of 50. So you can see not much variance. Got to watch out for the fog. Then there's a chance of showers in the morning tomorrow and a much greater chance in the afternoon tomorrow. Matter of fact, there might be a downpour or two, depending upon where you are in the valley, toward the dinner time tomorrow. And then again, a chance of showers continues on Wednesday. After the 61 tomorrow, 59 on Wednesday. Then it clears out to partly cloudy on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, with the highs right around the mid-60s. And then again Sunday, down to 58 and rain likely again. So we have got a couple of shots at rain. Hopefully we're going to get it, because we need it after a very dry January. And maybe as importantly or more importantly, we need that snowpack to build as well. So we'll see if it plays out. I tell you guys this all the time. The ones that do this for a living will tell you about the modeling and the verifying and all of that. All I can do is pass along what I hear, and that is be careful tomorrow if we have rain, and it'll be a welcome proposition, that's for sure. Anyway, thanks to Buddy at Lee's. Thanks to Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering. I'll get to everything else along those lines a little bit later on. Right now, let's turn to the longtime voice here, Bulldogs, and someone who saw the unfortunate recurrence of what has happened so often at the Lawler Center to Fresno State on Saturday night, which is the Bulldogs play very competitively, and then somehow the game gets away from them late. So let's talk about that and about baseball and everything else with Paul right now. Paul, how you doing?
Doing great, Tony. It's beautiful Monday. Hope everybody stays safe out on the roads. I know I just got to speak to the Retired Teachers Association at Hanford earlier today, and 99 was quite a crawl coming back up. So I hope everybody's careful out there and keeping it safe.
No doubt. And by the way, the entirety of Northern California and all the way down to us, very fortunate the Super Bowl happened to be this last weekend, because next weekend figures to be very, very stormy. So we need the rain. I'm not so sure the Chamber of Commerce up in the South Bay Area or in San Francisco would want to have the national TV audience see what's going to occur this weekend coming up. Instead, everybody back east said, wow, it's 70 degrees and sunny. Well, yes, it was, but it's not going to last for long. Paul, I want to get to Saturday pass because, as I just referenced, the Bulldogs, they've lost so many in the last several years to Nevada, but very few of them have been full-on blowouts. A lot of them have been what has happened both times this year. Fresno State comes down the stretch with a chance to win, and the game gets away. And I want to bring it up to you in this regard. Since we're in the Olympics right now, admittedly, the Winter Olympics, but the Summer Olympics, one of the feature events, the metric mile, the 1,500 meters. And it's always said that if you know there's a competitor against you, if you're somebody running the race, who has a better kick than you do, a better finishing kick, you need to break contact before you get to that last half a lap or so, because they're going, if they're close, to go right by you. To me, that's analogous to Fresno State and what happened Saturday. The Bulldogs had a chance, Paul, in my opinion, particularly if they would have made some of the open threes early on with guys that are capable of making those shots. They had a chance to break contact. Instead, it came down to the last 10 minutes or so in a trade-em situation, and then the last five, what I expected to have happen, unfortunately did, which is Nevada started making shots on their home floor, a couple of key threes, and the game got away. Did the Bulldogs lose that game late, or did they in reality lose it early by not putting Nevada away? Because they certainly had a shot to do it early on. What do you say about that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a multi-tiered question, Tony, because it's not a vacuum either.
Right.
You know, somebody, a wise guy, might make the case, well, they lost that game in the recruiting season when, you know, Nevada paid $400,000 to take Fresno State's best player.
Right.
That's a big part of the equation. And Elijah Price, you know, had some foul trouble, but played well. I think they overachieved early by building that lead. They played tremendous defense. But yeah, when you go the last 5 minutes and 45 seconds of the first half without scoring, you're not putting yourself in the best position to win. And they did, as you said, have a chance to break contact there. The other thing, too, I think a lot of people say, well, they missed open shots, they missed easy shots. You know, you're working so hard defensively at altitude that takes away from your offense, too. So it's, you know, those things are all factors. I'm not looking to make excuses. Zion Collins didn't start. He'd been late to practice the day before. He didn't play as many minutes. Could he have made a bigger difference? There are a lot of little things. If Wilson Jack stays out of foul trouble, do they do a better job on the defensive glass in the second half? Because that's really where the game turned, all the second chance opportunities for Nevada in the second half. They had 11 offensive rebounds in the second half after just two of the first half. All those things are factors. But you kind of go back to what you and I have talked about a little bit, which is, you know, and nobody likes to hear this, and this is not a knock on who Fresno State is, but, you know, Bulldogs are big underdogs there. Nobody, San Diego State's won there this year in the Mountain West. That's it. Nobody else has gone into Reno and win. There were 10,000 fans there. It was loud. It's one of the toughest places to play. And Fresno State, in my mind, on paper, given the matchup, given what Nevada spent on its team, what Fresno State spent on its team, the athleticism, when you look at both teams, the experience when you look at both teams, Fresno State was a big underdog, right? They weren't supposed to win that game. The fact that they almost won that game, that they could have won that game, you know, if you're looking glass half full, you say, okay, they're making progress. If you look at glass half empty, it's like, well, they missed an opportunity because they were in position to pull off what would have been a significant upset. And I think it's, you know, you have to look at the little things like you're talking about and say, yeah, they're in position, but you also have to keep your mind on the big picture, which is at this point, you know, Fresno State's basketball program is not what Nevada's is. And that's what they're trying to get to, right? Nevada's got 17 wins. Nevada's got, a Hall of Fame coach. Nevada's got more money to put into it. Nevada draws better. 10,000 at that game. Those are all things that go into winning in college basketball. And the encouraging part is, despite all those advantages that Nevada had, Fresno State played well enough to have a chance to steal one on the road that, again, nobody except San Diego State has been able to do in that venue. So disappointed that an opportunity was missed? Yeah. Should that say they're underachieving? Not at all, with what they have to work with. So now you take that and you look ahead to tomorrow, which might be the toughest place in the league to play, against a team that's 20-3, that's tied for the conference lead, that has absolutely demolished and embarrassed some opponents at the Spectrum in Logan this year. So, you know, how will Fresno State play there as an even bigger underdog against a team that the Bulldogs put a scare in when Utah State came to the Valley? You know, and another factor in that game, you know, Saturday. It was very similar to the game that Nevada and Fresno State played here, where what made the difference was a player off Nevada's bench. Tyler Rollison won the game for him in Fresno, and he won the game for him here. All of his points were in the second half, and he became a guy who could create off the bounce, and Fresno State didn't have anybody to stop him. And probably the young man best equipped to do so wasn't on the trip, because he's still battling, you know, concussion symptoms from taking an elbow over the eye at New Mexico a couple weeks ago. So keep praying for DJ Stickman. Hope he can return soon. If there's a chance for Fresno State and Nevada to play a third time, and Nevada follows the same script, which is really restrain your talent in an offense that doesn't let anybody create most of the time because they want to limit turnovers. They only turn it over 7 times. But when they turn somebody loose, like they did with Rollison in the second half, do you have someone who can handle it? And, you know, I sure would love to see DJ Stickman in that matchup if they get to play again. But those are all, you know, you asked me for my opinion. That's the micro and macro view from my perspective.
A couple of things, Paul, before we move to baseball, because I do want to cover it with the team starting, of course, on Friday here at home. But I've gotten emails about this, and I'm not saying that it was irrelevant by any means, but where do you put the Gorey missed dunk? It came at a bad time, and let me make this clear. It wasn't like Gorey was trying to hot dog it or whatever. He just happened to miss the dunk. He went up slow, nothing wrong with that. But it came at a time where that miss two turned into three the other way, and all of a sudden things turned. It was early enough that I don't think you can say it was irrevocable, but do you consider it a momentum factor at a very bad time, or was it not relevant even to that regard?
No, it's certainly a momentum factor. I mean, that's undeniable. If that goes in, what, are you up 5 at that point? And you could say that, you know, the carryover at the foul line when he missed 2 free throws after that might have been because he missed the dunk. But I think anyone who is suggesting that that's an automatic, or that's something easy, or that he made something mistake, yeah, I think you have a lack of understanding there. And Coach Q, I thought, made a real great point on that on the broadcast. Really helped us all understand that. Especially when you consider the angle he was coming from, right? He's cutting baseline. He's taking off from outside the arc. And you want to be aggressive, because if you go, you know, aggressively to dunk it, you might get fouled. You might get an and one. And it's not so easy once you're there to, you know, to finish, to switch to a different mode and try to finger roll it when you're already up above your head trying to dunk it. And because the angle is from the side, it's not as easy to lay it off the glass. So I think sometimes we get caught in saying, well, I've seen this guy do it a million times, so it must be easy. And that's just simply not the case. And Fresno State's not even in that game without Deshaun Gorey and his ability to do what really no one else on that team is doing right now, which is creating offense on his own off the dribble at a variety of levels. And I think that has to be the approach for Fresno State moving forward, is to give him the freedom to do that, which the coaches have done, and see how much more he can grow between now and the conference tournament in March.
That's a fair view, Paul, and that was kind of my response privately to some of the emailers, that yeah, I'm not going to dismiss it, as you reference, as something that was completely irrelevant, but it came early enough and it wasn't wide enough of a gap that you can say that it was going to change the game. So I'm not going to completely ignore it, but there's no way in the world that was the decider. You know, I'll never forget when the 49ers lost a playoff game to the New York Giants. They lost it 46-3 one year. And right at the start of the game, the very first possession of the game, Jerry Rice caught a pass over the middle and had a touchdown. It was a very cold day in the Meadowlands. And he went to switch hands with the ball, and he dropped it and kicked it inadvertently out of the back of the end zone. And, you know, my feeling was that that 7 points they missed was a momentum killer. And Lawrence Taylor said, yeah, you're right. It would have been 46-10 and not 46-3. Okay, that was his response. And, you know, and we 49er fans said, no, wait a minute, it would have been 7-0. So it didn't make any difference. It happened way, way too early. It wasn't going to change the game. The same thing, Paul. Had it happened in the last minute of the game, you could make the argument that it was a big deal. But it was just something that, you know, again, one more shrimp on the barbie for Fresno State there. And what you said is true. It's a really tough place to play. But, you know, the Bulldogs step by step are making progress. And before we move away, I did want to ask you this about that, though. As they're making progress, one of the things about this team is they brought more shooters in, capable shooters. They shot a lot of open threes, yet went 9 for 29 from the field, only 31%. Paul, what is the explanation about the inconsistency of the three-point shot from this team?
Because basketball is not played in a vacuum, Tony. I mean, you have to be, you know, you have to be open to make those a high percentage shot. You have to have space. Who's defending you from a personnel standpoint and a strategy standpoint are big variables. No one gets to shoot in a gym with no defense, you know, when the shots count. And you're right, there are some really good shooters on the team. And there were, you know, some that went in and out. There are some you thought they should make. There are also tough ones. I mean, Deshaun Gorey made an off-balance desperation three to beat the shot clock that was a very low percentage shot, and that went in. I think, you know, you're going up against teams with a lot of legs. I mean, Jake Heidbreeder has matched up a good chunk of that game with Corey Camper, who had just scored 35 at Boise State, who's a tremendous athlete, who, you know, has good closeouts, getting a hand in your face. You also had, you know, Nevada had a 7-footer out there in Coleman who erased a couple shots. You've got Elijah Price, who's probably got the best defensive timing of anyone in the league and, you know, should be one of the candidates for Defensive Player of the Year. He's getting his hands everywhere. He was responsible for a good chunk of the turnovers the Bulldogs had. So when you have that length, contesting passes, contesting shots, it's not just, you know, the physical part of it where your timing and opening to get that shot off is different, but it's then the mental carryover that when you've had your shot blocked or when you know how adept they are at those closeouts, then that factors into your psyche as well as your releasing it. It can rattle your confidence. And, you know, those are all some of the contributing factors. But ultimately, you know, if this team is going to be able to do what the Red Wave's hoping for and pull some of those upsets and win games they shouldn't, then, you know, let's be honest. That's what this team did Tuesday night at Seymour Center. Won a game where the other team is spending 3 or 4 times as much on its squad as future NBA players on that roster, one of whom didn't play. But, you know, if you're just looking at the eyeball test, UNLV had a lot more talent and length and size and strength on the floor, and Fresno State found a way to win. And the Red Wave had something to do with that. And that's one of the craziest, most unbelievable games I've ever seen. But that was one of those wins we talked about, right? When is Fresno State going to have the game where the Bulldogs overachieve and beat a team they shouldn't beat? And UNLV was one of them. And Saturday against Nevada was almost another one. And that tells you that they're getting better. So they have another chance to do something like that tomorrow in one of the toughest places in America to play. And let's see how they do.
Well, your points are well taken. I will say this, Paul, in previous times, and you brought it up on air when I've asked you about the three-point shooting, you are right. There's been length that's come out to bother them enough to bother the shot. One of the things about Saturday night, particularly early on, they were shooting absolutely wide open threes. And that's really frustrating when good shooters are shooting wide open shots and they just don't go down at a time when, as I mentioned at the start of this conversation, they really had a chance to put Nevada back by 15, 20 points if they just could have hit things early on. But, you know, again, it's the woulda, shoulda, coulda. One thing, though, before we move to baseball, Are they ahead of schedule, in your opinion, right now, on schedule, behind schedule, to be determined? Where are you at with this club right now? We were talking a few weeks ago. One of the things that Rodney Terry, and how many times we have this conversation with Rodney's teams, disaster maintenance in February. How many times were the Bulldogs taking on water at the start of February, but by the end of February, invariably, Rodney had them back on course. Is this team on course, Paul? Are they where you think they were going to be? Where are they at in your mind right now?
Well, you can answer that question in a variety of ways, Tony. Are you talking about, 2026? Or are you talking big picture? Because I think a lot of times, the whole paradigm has changed. And sometimes we're slow to adjust to that. In the old days, it was, okay, you win 6 games last year. So this year, you double that. Maybe you get to 500. You're making progress. And then you can build on that next year. But the reality is, for the mid-major programs, building on something this year, come next year, isn't the same, because your roster's not the same. Most of the teams in this conference this year turned over the majority of their roster. There are some teams that had zero returning players. And, now the cynical side tells you, hey, if you develop a guy this year, you can't afford to keep him for next year. And that's happening, not just at Fresno State, but a lot of places. So the progress that you make this year with this group of guys doesn't necessarily apply the way it used to. So in the big picture, I think that's an impossible question to answer. In the micro for this year's team, I think there's been a lot of progress. You look at, early on this year, there were games that they could have won but didn't. Now you look at that UNLV game and what should have been a game that, when they're down 5 with 6.8 to go and UNLV's got the ball, that's an impossible game to win. It just doesn't happen. But Bastion Reber baits him into a flagrant foul. That's what he does best. He makes both free throws. Douglas hits the 3. UNLV throws it away. Heidbreeder hits the game winner. You're like, wow, I guess it wasn't impossible. So when a team that's been through some of those tough losses stays focused enough, resilient enough, believing in each other enough to pull those off, that's progress. So this team has made progress. Now you look down the rest of the way. A lot of factors are going to intervene. How healthy can they be? Does the same focus, the same cohesion, the same chemistry remain? Are there any distractions? If they, go through a game where they do get dominated in one of these tough road environments, does that have a hangover? Does it weigh on them? Or can they remain as optimistic and, just continue this trajectory they're on? We'll see. With the new format in the conference tournament this year, because there's 12 teams instead of 11, only 4 teams are getting byes. That means no matter where the Bulldogs end up seated, they're going to play a team that they can beat and in probably all likelihood already have beaten this year. So I think there's an opportunity there to win a game at the conference tournament, to generate momentum. And then at that point, as we've seen over the years, you're playing with house money. And you're playing a team that's got a lot more pressure and a bigger burden. So who knows? But I'm confident whoever they play on Wednesday in Vegas, they're going to have a really good chance to win that game. And then let's see. And that, ultimately that's where the proving ground is going to be. Can they make some noise in that conference tournament? How much better can they get between now and then? How much more consistent can they do? Can they be? They're doing a lot of the little things that add up to victories. And sometimes in this conference, it's just not enough. Coach Wahlberg was talking about it the other day. Some of the top home court advantages in America are in the Mountain West Conference, and it's about half the conference that's in that top 10. So it's really a tough league to go on the road and win. And I think that's the next big thing. They won on the road at Air Force. That was big, right? That was first altitude win for Coach Wahlberg. Can they do something else in conference on the road? Utah State, that would be a monumental upset that turns heads around the country. But, when they go to Wyoming next week, can they find a way to win that game, a place where Utah State almost lost the other night? When they go to Grand Canyon, how are they going to perform against a really talented team? There are a lot of tests still in front that I think give this team a chance to grow even more. And that's what tests do, right? For a basketball team, for all of us in life. None of us really enjoy being tested, but hopefully we come through the other side of the test with greater focus, greater strength, greater depth of character, greater ability. That's how you grow. So I think this team has grown a lot from the start of the year. And I think there's some opportunities still in front for them to grow even more.
Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow night. I can tell you this for sure, Paul. If they can get off to the start at Logan that they got off to last year, Vance is going to be very pleased. Because if you remember, the Aggies looked up and the Bulldogs were up 17 early on in that game. Now, admittedly, they awoke from their slumber, but the Aggies did. But the Bulldogs would love to get that kind of advantage early on. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. All right, I want to shift our focus to baseball. Robert had emailed in. You're right, Robert, that as I had referenced at the start of this conversation, after a very, very dry January, all of a sudden the bat and ball sports start. Now, softball was just fine this weekend weather-wise, but Fresno State opens up on Friday, and now you see the chance for rain. That's how it works these days. Robert mentioned that he expects this team, Paul, to win the conference. That's his view almost every year. He said this year that he looks at Nevada as maybe being a more understandable winner of the thing, given all the circumstances. But what do you view as the likely occurrence with Ovi and this team this year? Is it a team that's going to not win the regular season, but again show up big in the conference tournament? Or is this a team you expect to be on top of the conference all year long, or none of the above?
Well, I think it's way too early to say any of that, Tony. I mean, last year at this point, what we thought they'd have got changed significantly. I mean, they ended up with four of their best pitchers out for a good chunk of that season, yet they still found a way to win the Mountain West tournament. Nevada was picked to win it, and I think understandably so. Nevada's got incredible offense coming back, almost the entire lineup for a team that won the regular season title last year and was an extra inning marathon in Arizona away from winning the tournament title. So understandably, Nevada, even with the head coach leaving late, is the pick to win it. But in the new format this year, with more teams in the league, the only three games that those two teams are going to play against each other are going to be in Fresno at the start of the conference season. So if I'm a Diamond Dog fan, I'm circling that weekend. It's the conference opening weekend. We're going to have Pete Biden Day that weekend, which is always fantastic. So that's, the middle of March when Nevada comes in. And by that point, we'll know more about this team because they're playing a vicious non-conference schedule. Utah's going to be here for four games this weekend, Pepperdine for four the next weekend. Then they go to Stanford for three. Then they go to Arizona for three. So they'll already have been tested with six games against the Big 12, three against the ACC, and, seven games against the Big 12. And then four more against the Pepperdine program that, like Fresno State, has won a national championship, has a lot of pride and tradition. So by the time they open conference play against the Wolfpack, which is probably the most important conference weekend of the year, we'll know a lot more about this team. Right now, there are a lot of question marks, right? I mean, you had some absolute studs that you could count on last year offensively, like Murph Gray and Justin Stransky. When you look at this year's team, most of the most experienced and proven players are coming off injury. None more catastrophic than Sky Collins in that devastating moment in Arizona. But Sky's back, and I'm a believer that Sky Collins has professional potential. He is all quick twitch. You know, if he can recapture that speed that he showed before, he's got surprising power. I mean, when he gets a hold of one, he can hit it 500 feet. Tremendous defensive player. So he's not 100% yet, but hopefully he gets there during the season. On the mound, we know how important pitching is. And, the two most proven pitchers on the staff, Jake Riding and Vic Arreola, both missed last season. So how long does it take for them to return to form, or are they there from the get-go? How do you use Drew Townsend, who was a revelation last year and I think still has the potential to get better and better? Do you want him in the rotation? Do you want him to be able to close out ball games? A lot of question marks. More injuries when you look around the diamond. Cam Schneider, couldn't throw all offseason because he had surgery. Jaden Munster hurt his hand again, but he's back, and I think he's primed for a big year. Lee Trevino, what he did at the end of the year last year was crucial to them winning the tournament. You need to keep him healthy at that shortstop spot. And if not, somebody else has to step up. So there are a lot of variables with this team. But I think the momentum of the program, the leadership of a really experienced coaching staff that you just added a huge pile of gravy on top of with one of the all-time greats in Tom Goodwin, who brings so much credibility and perspective. I have confidence that this team is going to be a lot better in April and May than it is the first two weekends. And so in my mind, you know, if they come out of this first month 500 or better, that's a huge win because of the incredible difficulty of the schedule they're playing. So all that to say, to Robert's question, it's way too early to tell where this team's going to be. But I think the track record of his coaching staff, the amount of local players on this team, the chemistry that exists in the clubhouse with some real leaders, and a guy I didn't mention I think is going to have a fantastic year, and that's Griffin Sotomayor. He was kind of one of the unsung heroes of last year's team, but a Valley guy who his teammates love, does everything the right way, super tough out. And, you know, we'll see where he ends up playing defensively, if he's DHing some more, but he's a versatile guy. And I think his leadership's going to go a long way for this team this year, too.
Well, a couple things here. One, we've talked about the Mountain West, even though it has had great depth, it has not been necessarily a multiple bid league. This year, if Nevada is as advertised, and what you're saying is true, and Robert reflected in his email, so many really quality players returning for that club, is this a year that you could see more than one bid, particularly if Nevada doesn't win the conference tournament?
Well, I think a lot of that will be determined in the next month, because really, you know, I'm not a fan of it, but the reality is your RPI ranking is what that's based on. And that's determined more in the non-conference than anything else. So how Fresno State does in non-conference, how Nevada does in non-conference, how Grand Canyon, who's coming into the league this year, does, New Mexico, all those schools are playing some big-time opponents that give them opportunities to strengthen the RPI. And it's really one of those things where one team can't carry the water. You need multiple teams getting those big non-conference wins, preferably on the road, to strengthen the RPI. Because it really has nothing to do with how good of a team you are and how well you pass the eyeball test. It's all about who you play, who you beat, and who the teams you play beat. And I understand the science behind it. It's just, it's not always the best predictor. And, you know, in this league, that's been a tough one. It's been very difficult to have a good enough RPI for multiple bids to exist. And in years where they probably should have been, like, you know, when Nevada had an RPI in the top 20, but went 0-2 in the conference tournament on its home field, Wolfpack didn't get in that year, which to me is one of the biggest robberies I've ever seen in the selection situation. But is there potential there for two bids? Yes, but ask me again in a month, because at that point it may already be impossible based on non-conference results. Hate to pull back the veil and the curtain, but that's the way it works in 2026. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right. I think it's the power conferences buying their way to more bids. But that's the current operating system that college baseball is under.
Yep, you're seeing certain conferences have 8-9 deep going into the postseason, and you do shake your head about it. The other thing, Paul, I want to ask you about in that regard, we've talked about what's going to happen next year. Now, I'm not minimizing this year, and the Mountain West has been a very competitive baseball conference. Like I said, a lot of depth. We've had the standings where there's just a couple of games separating the top 5-6 teams in a given year. But do you view next year as a quantum leap forward? You do lose some quality baseball programs, no doubt, but you also gain some as well. How do you view what the Bulldogs have in front of them in the pack next year with Dallas Baptist, teams like that coming in? A major leap forward or minor or what, as you view it?
Well, in terms of the quality of the conference, it's a major step forward. I mean, you just look at those two teams. You mentioned Oregon State and Dallas Baptist, and they're in every regional for over a decade. So you're absolutely going to be a multi-bid league. But are you good enough to be one of those bids is the question. And, you know, in all candor, Fresno State cannot rely on just tradition and local recruiting. I think this is something where, you know, if the Bulldogs want to be competitive, now, you know, you can understand what needs to happen without understanding how it's going to happen. And that's what I'm saying here. But to have a good chance of being competitive in that league, I think a couple things need to happen. There needs to be an investment in resources into baseball, whether that's facilities. I mean, this program could really use a new clubhouse facility. I think there are ways to do that that could really engage alumni better, and that is the biggest strength of this program, the alumni network. And then scholarships, right? When college baseball is now allowed 34 scholarships, and you have schools in your CSU system that are funding 25-plus scholarships for their baseball teams, you know, if the community and the Red Wave wants baseball to be competitive, I think that's something that's going to need to happen. So that, you know, the other angle on that is revenue sharing and NIL and all that. So finding a way, though, basically to get the best players. Because if Fresno State stays on 11.7 scholarships and Cal Poly has 25, then, you know, it might be that five or six of those players who might have gone to Fresno State for a partial scholarship are going to Cal Poly for a full ride, if they can get in, you know. And this is just a hypothetical example, but that's some of what they're dealing with in the competition. And we're just all conditioned to Fresno State's been so good at baseball for so long, the Bulldogs should always be that good. But the landscape has changed so significantly. So, you know, it's one of those things, you can't wait around for Daddy Warbucks to give you everything you need. Fresno yeah. State's track record forever has been grassroots, let's all work together, and together we can make this happen. And I think that's what's going to need to happen in the Fresno State baseball community. It's going to take everybody working together to improve the facilities, to fund more scholarships, and to keep Fresno State relevant in a sport where there's no sport on campus that has a better tradition. And that means a lot to a lot of people. And I think we're all going to have to ask ourselves, what can we do to keep Fresno State relevant in college baseball? Because the challenge and the league next year are a much tougher equation.
And who knows where other ads might come in the years to come in that league. And so you better look out there, too. And to your point, Paul, and I have to remind myself about this as I turn into a doddering old man right before my very eyes, as my wife reminds me, by the way, on a daily basis, which I appreciate a great deal, as you might imagine. I can't believe it has been 42 years since the renovation of Biden Bennett, you know, at the time, just Biden Field. But, you know, at the time, when it turned into a legitimate stadium instead of a bunch of silver bleachers and a green little green press box, it was state of the art. It was the envy of West Coast baseball, etc. And now, Paul, because of monies that have gone to other places, you have so many facilities that far outstrip what Fresno State has in front of it. And I guess 42 years is probably the reason for it, in addition to the financial realities. So after 42 years, time for a major upgrade. Is that fair to say, facility-wise? I mean, you're talking about some of the things that have to be done. Is it a massive overhaul we need to see?
Yeah, Tony, I mean, I think realistically, if you want to get Fresno State competitive in baseball, especially in a league with Oregon State, with Dallas Baptist, with a school like Gonzaga that doesn't have football as the main priority, you know, Washington State, which is spending more money and trying to be relevant. San Diego State, which is going to have the biggest overall athletic budget in the new Pac-12. If you want to be competitive with those schools, absolutely. It's long overdue. And I think a lot of people will never realize how much Bob Bennett and later on Mike Batesole did that was punching above their weight class, that it wasn't the facilities, it wasn't, you know, the budget, it was their expertise and the support of the Red Wave that overcame some of the disadvantages. And that has to be part of the formula again for this to happen. But yeah, I think facility-wise, you're looking at to get back to where you're equal with the schools that you're going up against in recruiting. And a lot of those are Big West schools. I mean, I'm talking Fullerton, Irvine, Cal Poly. They've far surpassed Fresno State in some of those things that have nothing to do with between the lines, but have to do with getting kids to go there to play between the lines. If you want to catch up to those folks, I mean, I think you're looking at an investment $15 to $20 million in the next few years to really get there. And, you know, maybe you
bite off a chunk of that to generate momentum. You do what you can do now and prove that it can be done and rally the community, and then they want to do more. There are a lot of different ways to approach it, but that's the stark reality of how much the college sports landscape has changed, especially in baseball. And some people may look at that and get intimidated. Well, where are we going to find all that money for baseball? We're trying to keep up in football. But I think there are enough people in this town who are smart enough and, you know, optimistic enough to say, you know what, if that's what it takes, let's find a way. And certainly in the alumni network, there are people with that kind of mindset too. So if we can find a way to get all those people together and moving in the same direction, to me, that's absolutely something that can happen that would change the next few generations of Bulldog baseball players.
No question. Also for me, Paul, I'm wistful about it because in 1984, when we had the renovation, I was 27 years old, and goodness knows I would love to be 27 years old again. I have a strong hunch, however, it's not going to happen. Just my guess. Very quickly, before I let you go, I always appreciate the time. Have a terrifically successful evening and safe trip home from Logan after tomorrow. Anthony Galabese of the Bee, who's a fine writer, wrote about Derek Carr's possibility of coming back, and Anthony mentioned the Dolphins are looking, the Jets are looking, the Raiders could be looking, although I think with Mendoza drafted, it might be a real wise idea for the Raiders, maybe more than just cursory, to look at Derek and say, Derek, you could be the shepherd for Mendoza for a year or two here, and maybe, just maybe, resurrect the end of your career. But however, and Robert, you brought it up in your email as well, Paul, I always think about what Tim McDonald told me when he retired. He said one of the reasons he retired, he said, I felt very lucky. And keep in mind, now we're talking about Tim McDonald. We're talking about the guy, not only Super Bowl champion, of course, Edison standout, but a guy that Bill Walsh said was quite probably the best strong safety to ever play in the National Football League. And Bill Walsh did not throw around those compliments very often, for particularly players with the 49ers. There's a deal on AMC Plus about the 49er heyday, and the players talk about Bill Walsh was not effusive in his praise of his team. Trust me. The bottom line is, Tim told me that except for his shoulder bothering a bit, in his mid-30s, he got out with a chance to coach his kids, play with his kids, etc. Paul, Derek is 34 years old. He is young enough, certainly, though the Saints hold his draft right or his playing rights at the moment, he is a viable option. But you know, Derek, is it really down to, can I come back and play and not further injure myself and jeopardize my family life? Is that really the bottom line, more than money, more than desire for Super Bowl, everything else? Is that the bottom line here that's going to decide whether he comes back or not?
I'm going to offer a different take on that. And I'll say it absolutely has nothing to do with money. I think he proved that with how much he walked away from this last
right.
year.
I mean, if that I agree.
Doesn't eliminate yep. all questions, I don't know what does. And I don't think it's about whether or not he believes he can play and stay healthy. I think he's confident he can. I think he knows he can help a team win. I think it's all down. And, again, I'm not preaching. I just know the man. And for him, it's discerning God's will. Because Derek has a lot of things, right? He'll tell you he's going to be a husband and a father for the rest of his life. He's only going to be a player for so long. He had let go of that dream. Sometimes when we surrender something, God puts it back in our hands. And that may be what's happening for Derek now, with a chance to go back to the league. If he can play for a winner that has a chance to compete, or if he feels another purpose, you know, like the scenario you described in Las Vegas, if he is the mentor, or as you said, shepherd, which I think is a very appropriate word for how he's wired. That may be enticing. But I also know, and Derek has been very clear public about this, he wants to coach. You know, he can coach for a lot longer than he can play. So if there's a coaching opportunity that is really enticing right now that outweighs the opportunity to play for another year or two, maybe he goes for that, especially if through talking it over with Heather and his family and praying about it, that's where he feels led. But there's no doubt in my mind, ultimately, that's what it's going to come down to. What does he believe God is calling him to do next in his life? And there's a whole lot of stuff that he can do. That doesn't mean he should do everything he can do. And one thing I know he's going to do, which I hope everyone will come join us, is he's going to be there at the Fresno Clovis Prayer Breakfast February 17th. Steve Green from Hobby Lobby and the Museum of the Bible is the speaker. but Derek's going to be one of the leaders from our community who goes up to the microphone and prays for some other folks in our community. And I'm just so thankful that he's back in town, that he's engaged, and whatever he ends up doing next, I know he's going to make a big difference here in Fresno and the Valley. So I would love to cheer for him in a few more NFL games as a player. And I don't think he'll keep us waiting too long before he answers that question.
Well, whatever he does, I hope he finds, you know, the fulfillment from it. And as I let you go, Paul, once again, we will wait now for the spring to see if Paul George gets that first title in Mount Rushmore land. If not, maybe Derek will be back in line, although I know that Aaron is waiting impatiently to grab that title with the Yankees in this next season. Paul, appreciate it. Have a great one. Tell Q I said hello. I'll be listening tomorrow. Certainly talk to you later in the week. Take care.
Sounds good, Tony. And I think Judge may get it done this year. I got to listen in on an All Rise Foundation webinar that he did with Sean Casey today. And, man, that guy's mindset is so rock solid. So I would not count him and the Yankees out from knocking the Dodgers off in 2026.
Nothing would make me happier. Trust me. All right. I'll talk to you later, Paul. Take care. Unless for the Giants. And unless Aaron was playing for the Giants, but that's a story for another time. All right, guys. Paul Leffler will take a break. Come back with more. Bulldog Hour continues on this Monday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Coming up soon. The show handed off to Billy's great show behind the bench. The full 3 hours today. Give him a call. He was, of course, on Radio Row at Moscone Center in San Francisco and there for the Super Bowl in Santa Clara. So Phil has a lot to tell you about, a lot to talk about. Clovis Dave, give Phil a call on the Lee's Air Hotline at 559-320-1430, and you can tell him what you told me. It was a dreadfully boring Super Bowl, in your opinion. And when it was 19-0, I would agree with you, Dave, that that was not exactly a fun-filled, excitement-laden Super Bowl, although the Patriots tried to make it interesting. I figured I had mentioned before the NFC title game, I had said whoever won between the Rams and the Seahawks would win the Super Bowl. And for the 49ers, are going to have to deal with the fact that two of the very best teams in the National Football League, maybe the two best, are sitting in their division. And by the way, when we talk about our Mount Rushmore, who's going to get there first with the title, Aaron certainly has a more than legitimate chance with the Yankees right now. Paul George, if Embiid stays healthy, when Paul comes back from his suspension, depending upon the health of the rest of the league, with Maxey and Edgecombe in the backcourt right now, Philly has a shot. We know that Devontae is right there. The Rams are co-favorites this next year coming back around. So maybe one of those three is going to get that title, or maybe Derek will come back and out of nowhere pick up the title. So our Mount Rushmore is still very much in play when it comes to somebody finally picking up a world title. Now, as far as our schedule goes, it's brought to you by Ed Dunkel at Precision Civil Engineering. Great business. Ed, terrific benefactor through the Lyles College of Engineering at his alma mater, Fresno State, and does so much for the Valley, and a really great person as well. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all they're under one roof. 449-4500, precisioneng.net for more information. And as we mentioned, all the fundraising Ed does through the Lyles College of Engineering with the goal to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully, and so many of those grads go right to work for Ed, and we thank Ed for all of his support and everything he does to support athletics in the Valley. As far as the lineup goes for us, the Lakers, off that long road trip because of the Grammys, home for eight straight. They've won the first two, including beating the Warriors on national TV on ABC on Saturday. Not exactly what the network had in mind because Steph was out and Luka was out. That's not how they like to market a game. Luka is still out tonight as the defending champion Thunder come in. 6:45 to pre, 7 o'clock. They'll tip it at the Crypt, and I think Jalen Williams is going to be back from his hamstring, but Luka's still going to be out, and the Lakers have a real tough back-to-back as they have the Spurs coming in right after that, so we have both of those games for you. All-Star break coming up toward the end of the week, and it means that for a lot of teams, like for instance, Steph now is going to sit because of his knee for the Warriors until the break is done, and Luka may very well sit out these final games. The Lakers have this back-to-back, and then they finish the de facto first half of the year against Dallas at home. So we'll see if Luka comes back or not. But this is that time of year where with the All-Star break, which, by the way, will be down at the Crypt there, crypto.com, that the guys, if they're a little bit banged up, will go ahead and take the time off. So we'll see how it plays out. Want to remind you about beyond the Lakers, the Sharks are still around. Mentioned that Phil is going to be in Tulare at World Ad Expo both tomorrow and Wednesday at 3 o'clock, and then we'll be in this time slot for a 2 to 4 on Thursday. So we'll be off on Thursday. Phil normally 3 to 6 with his fine show behind the bench, including at Fashion Furniture on Thursday with our good friend Rod Avedikian. Best furniture on the planet, nothing like it in all of California. Some good eats when Phil's around, and the great conversation. You can always give Phil a call on the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. Stop on in. Rod has great sales going on right now at Fashion Furniture El Paso across from River Park. Paul Metters, two fine shows. The show all about Fresno Pacific Athletics, Sunburst Sports Show, Wednesday, 6 to 7 in the evening on our sister station, the Deuce 790. Also, Paul has his long-running show, Central Valley Sports Report, on 1430, live from First String Sports, 10 a.m. to noon on Saturdays. We're with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, TDAD1, at ATT.net. TDAD, the number 1, at ATT.net. First names are fine. Everything for the station, 1430, ESPNFresno.com. You'll find the live links and podcast there. So I want to thank Jorge once again and thank Paul Leffler for his time again today. Paul and Q are in Logan. They'll have that game tomorrow. I'll talk to Jackson about the preview of the game tomorrow, and then Jack Furtig will be with me for the post of that and the look at it when we talk on Wednesday. Thanks again, everybody, for hanging in and the emails as well. Give Phil a call. Stop by and see him in Tulare beginning tomorrow, and we will carry you guys all the way through the week, and we'll roll toward Bat and Ball Sports at Fresno State again over the weekend. This is KFIG Fresno.